Well, hello again, George Holford, Local Matters. Today we're with roots dating back to 1915. The Johnson family has been growing plants in Putnam County for over a century. Now in its fifth generation, the Nursery and Garden Center is proudly run by Chuck and David Johnson. And Chuck, we're so glad to have you here today.
Well, thank you very much. Let me add a few more people there now.
Yeah, you've got some more.
Me, Sarah, my wife.
Yes, Sarah.
And Dave's my son. And then Charlie. Charlie works with us.
I know I shouldn't just be reading this thing off, but don't you dare tell Sarah I left her on. But we're so glad. As I mentioned to you off air, this show, I love this show because, not because I'm doing it, but it tells a story of our community. Through the eyes of our people, it's the tapestry of our community, and it's the who. And we're going to listen and learn. It's hard for me to do is listen, as you probably have already gathered, Charlie. But we're going to listen and learn about who are you, your family, what's important growing up in your business, and with sons, the future of Johnson Nursery. So welcome again.
Thank you.
And I'm going to do a Billy Graham thing. Let's start at age birth. Let's just talk about you and birth and growing up and how you got where you are today.
I was born in Cookeville, mm-hmm. where the old library was. It's over there at Globe Square.
Sure.
In 1943.
Okay.
And then, but I lived in Baxter until I did my graduate work at UT.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked for a long time. We lived about a mile outside of Baxter.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of southeast of Baxter there. Today it would be First Avenue, I think, and just about a half mile north of the truck stop there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I can remember my grandfather bought farm there in 1918.
Okay.
And then my father and uncle started a nursery in 1949, right next to him, but a separate business.
Mm-hmm.
Because my grandfather was a grower, and he was retail too.
Mm-hmm.
My father and uncle were growers, but for wholesale trade only.
I see. Sure.
And I can remember that. We were very free at that time in terms of parent supervision. you hear the stories now, you know, you had to be home before dark.
Oh, yeah, different era. I was in that era.
That's the way it was, because we would be gone, and we would be long trips. We would go hiking down Miley Creek, down to Gentry's Bluff or whatever, and be 5-6 miles from home.
No big deal.
As long as we got back at dark, we were okay, so it wasn't a big deal. And it probably would be dangerous if you got hurt, but we didn't have to worry about the things you have today. My grandfather's nursery was right next to where he lived, and I can remember going down to where the truck stop is now, mm-hmm. Love's Truck Stop, and Charles Myers had cornfield there. And we'd go in there, and he always would grow watermelons in the cornfield. So we would go help ourselves to the watermelon.
I understand that, too.
And then on the property line there, it was chestnut trees, and we'd go pick up chestnuts and things.
Mm-hmm.
So we were much freer back then that we could do what we wanted to, and we rode bicycles everywhere. And that was our transportation. And I had a good friend, Jim at Austin,
mm-hmm.
and we would do a lot of things together. We'd go fishing or squirrel hunting. And but we would go take our bicycles. At that time, we'd go down the ditches on the road, pick up Coke bottles.
Yeah, sure. Deposits.
And take it up to the grocery store up there above the railroad tracks. We're pretty close to where the drugstore is now. And we'd get 2 cents for each bottle, and we'd get Cokes and candy and whatever. And
life was pretty good, wasn't it?
It seemed like it was good for us.
Yeah, I understand.
And we enjoyed it, and it was very free. But I think the kids today just really miss that part of it.
We've lost that, haven't we?
Yeah, everything's got to be on the thumbs now and on the phone or whatever. And that's the problem is now that's going back to their parents. Now the parents are about as bad as they are.
No question. No question.
So it's kind of a habit thing. But really, it was good, I think, in the sense that you learned to do it yourself. If you got hurt, tough break.
Right. That's right.
You see a commercial on TV now. A boy says, I got hurt. His mother says, go get a Band-Aid. He said, I got hurt real bad. She said, go get two Band-Aids in.
That's right.
So that's the only time you hear anything that would resemble what way we were brought up. And I had two younger sisters. Mm-hmm. I'd born in 43. Mary Louise was born in January of 47.
Mm-hmm.
And then another sister called Frances was born in December mm-hmm. of 47.
Mm-hmm.
Same year now.
I understand, yeah.
And then another sister was born in 1956, Betty Sue.
Okay.
And she's about 13 years difference. And I think that, you know, we were all very close, but more friendly, I think, with the boys in the
city. Oh, sure. Right.
And the girls did their own thing. We were never in high school together or anything.
So. I see. Sure.
And now Sabre and I were in high school, and I met her probably when she was about senior year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
I started Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember going to the Upperman football game.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And trying to sit next to her.
Trying
was a word. But things were kind of cool at first, but we kept on, and we dated for about three years.
Wow, okay, sure.
And you know, we were married in 66.
Okay.
So we've been married
pretty while.
59 years coming up.
Wow.
Next year will be our 60th anniversary.
That's great. That's great.
And so we have always tried to raise our family the way we would want them to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Try to bring them up as Christian kids. But we believe in you're on your own.
I understand.
You got to do a lot of thinking for yourself.
Yeah, it's time to grow. Yeah, I understand. It was a way of life. What you described, we've lost it by and large, but I grew up a lot. When you said the bicycle was our method of transportation, that's exactly what our family had. And Dad had very few rules. When it's time for, quote, supper, you better be home for supper. Now, you can go back out and play as long. We didn't have curfews back then. You played, you couldn't. The screened-in porch, you couldn't go anymore, right? Whenever you want to come in, go to bed, you go to bed.
Go to bed. And, but my father, of course, he worked all the time, too.
Yeah, mine did, too,
and,
sure.
And my mother, she would stay at home with the cooking and the cleaning and everything with three children. So, but we had neighbors, but you're still isolated. Baxter's sure. was small back then, too.
That's right.
The population maybe was 800 to maybe 900.
Okay.
And I can still remember when the last steam locomotive came through there. And then I remember when the last passenger train came through.
Whoa, yeah, sure.
So we rode it from Baxter to Cookeville.
Yep.
And one thing I remember that, you see in the old picture, these big velvet seats, big high back seats and things. But that was about the extent of my travel as far as on a train. But we did it. It cost like, I think it was a quarter or 50 cents to ride from Baxter to Cookeville there. And but we had the privilege about 10, 15 years ago take two of my granddaughters on a train ride from Cookeville to Lebanon.
Oh, that's great. Way.
And that's probably, you know, the only time they've been on a train.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not very much desire to do it again because my son David and I went, we were in Oregon. He was working in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the train from Portland. We were going to take it back to Memphis.
Whoa, yeah.
Sam, but yeah. We went to Glacier Park and up that way.
Yeah. Man, that was a...
And then going through North Dakota and South Dakota, we decided we're going to get off the train in Chicago.
That's right. So we got a off, long way.
We got off the train, went to the baseball game, and took flew home.
I understand that. No, but what a great experience, though, to be able to... We lost that. Again, talking about the rail. How many kids grow up today have never been on a train before? I mean, never been on a railroad.
You know, I can find a train anyhow.
That's right. That's right. That's good. Got a little piece, some seconds left in this segment. That is what you're describing is, I said earlier, the story of, for a lot of us, of America, of who we were and how we grew up and how we learned and the values that we learned. We didn't realize that we were, we didn't realize how good we had it. Maybe I'm trying to say it that way.
Well, you got a few more minutes?
Oh, we're coming back. Yeah, we're going to come back in about it. We got about a minute. So.
Well, my grandfather had the nursery at Baxter, and before I got my driver's license, he would let me drive him to the nursery so he could supervise the employees and things and come back. And then when I got my driver's license, I would drive him to Mac Menville. And a year or so later, he had a girlfriend over there. And there's been many a time that I double dated with my grandfather.
That's a great story, yeah.
I take him over there to see his girlfriend.
You go see your girlfriend.
I go to a movie then or something.
Sure.
So not many people can say the grandfather.
And Menville was and is a major nursery worldwide in this whole area. So we'll be right back. Great start. And George Hofford with Chuck Johnson, back soon. Well, we're back. George Hofford, Local Matters with Chuck Johnson, one of the patriarchs of Johnson Nursery and Garden Center, several generation institution business, and went back in time myself, Chuck, as you were talking, and we're about in the same generation of the way we were growing up. But let's pick up where we left off. And you were talking about you would take your grandfather down to Menville, and you had a little girlfriend, and you were taking him down there. So let's pick up with Menville. And the nurse, they say one time, nursery capital of the world.
For a while, they recall that. And there's still a lot of nurseries there.
Yes, there are.
But in my memory, it's not like it used to be.
Sure.
It used to be when I would drive to Mac Menville, it just... Everybody like a garden had a little nursery next to the house.
That's right. That's
and
right.
It'd just be one after another.
That's right.
Now they have gotten larger and everything. But that all started about 1870.
Wow.
J.H.H. Boyd. He's up around Cagle. You know, you go through Spencer up that way on 111. Had a farm up there, and his cows were dying. And he... contacted someone in Philadelphia and to kind of see what was going on, and it was determined that it was the Calicanthus floridus, which is a bubby bush, which was growing wild, and the cows were eating it and killing it.
Wow, no, okay.
And then after that, they made an agreement that the professor would come to Mac Menville and show him other plants that could be used for medicine. Medicine was more important than landscaping at that time.
That's right.
But they worked on that. And then in about 1890, the representative from the Biltmore Estate approached him, and he sent over 1 million trees to the Biltmore Estate. And... they would transport them down to the depot there in Mac Menville and then over to North Carolina. And also they did a lot at the parks in New York, sent a lot of trees.
That's when this whole thing really, when it took off. Is that where yours
That's where
the birth of this.
And, you know, nursery people are willing to share.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm.
and they're willing to train. And so many of the nurseries at McMinnville have started because they worked at another nursery.
Just one started the other.
Started another one, and that's how it all got started. So they were going pretty good in the early 1900s. And there's not very much on records that we can tell a lot about. But we think that my grandfather, W.L. Johnson,
mm-hmm.
the only written proof I've got his sales books in here from mm-hmm. 1915.
That's great.
They were raised in Buffalo. They were Buffalo Valley mm-hmm. down on Indian mm-hmm. Creek.
Mm-hmm.
They moved up to the top of the hill to Hopewell.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a nursery there. And we don't know how big or where it was or anything like that. But they had to be growing before 1915 because you can't sell trees unless you grow them for 3 or 5 years.
So your family was very early on in the nursery business with the startup and the McMinnville and all this was going on. Y'all were a part of that.
That's part of it, but, you know, it's kind of isolated.
Yeah, sure.
And if you've ever been to Hopewell or down that area, down through there. But I don't know what nursery they started, but I've got records of Silver Point Nursery.
Silver Point, sure.
Bowman Nursery.
Okay.
Hopewell Nursery. Putnam County Nursery. So I don't know if they had to change every year because people ask them or what, but but they got that's four names there of nurseries, and then of course the Baxter Nursery started in 1918.
Okay.
But I thought all the time that my grandfather was the first generation, but I've got sales books in here that's got my great grandfather's name.
So you really go back.
But
beyond, yeah, yeah.
It could be that he worked for my grandfather. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way they did it back then, they would go on the road to sell.
I see.
My grandfather would take an old horse and buggy like that and do East Tennessee and Kentucky.
Chuck's showing me a picture of his cart and buggy and horse and what year was that probably?
I have no idea.
But a long time ago. That's great.
But they would go, I don't know. I've got sales tickets in here for Winchester, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's south of Lexington, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long way. So yes, I don't know how he got there.
But he got there.
He got there. But they would sell a lot of, they've got the books in here, and the books have all the plants listed and things
like
that.
So you've got a lot of history right here in front of me of your family business for generation after generation.
And they would have salespeople. Mm-hmm. One was Cal Brown, one was A.V. Richardson, and several others. And they would go out and be gone for a week at a time to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would ship the plants to them at a later date, at a better planting time or whatever. And
wow.
They would give them credit if they ate dinner with them, a quarter, a credit. Or if they stayed all night, they would give them maybe a dollar.
Yeah, sure.
Credit. And I saw one today. I was looking here. They'd given them a $30 credit. So that was probably for all week. They probably went to one house and stayed there all week and then went out every day
sure.
to sell everybody else.
Chuck, you used a word a while ago that I've grown to – and Eldon Leslie, a good friend, my successor, tried to explain to me. This was – you used the word isolation. The Upper Cumberland, this region was a very isolated area before the railroad. You had rivers. But, you know, the roads and, then of course, not even thought about interstates and four-lane highways. But this was a very isolated part of the state for commerce, for shipping.
The railroad changed everything.
Changed, late 1800s.
Yeah. I can remember my grandfather grew strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
And they would ship them out by train to different markets.
But distribution, when you were saying that earlier about your salesman— your family. It wasn't like you just put them on a truck and sent them on. You know, I mean, it was very limited what you could do. The river, of course, played to some type of companies and businesses. Logging, for instance.
Well, a lot of times, you know, when you're young, when you're young, you don't listen to what people are talking about.
That's right.
And that's
been going on for a long time.
So I can remember my grandfather trying to tell me that he used to float logs to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I was 8, 10 years old, I didn't pay very much attention to it. But I'd love to know more about that detail.
Eldon Leslie told me that story about logging. They cut, you know, the logging industry, they would, his family, people's ancestors, would ride the logs to Nashville.
Yes.
And that's how they walk home. Mm-hmm. I've heard that story. We're running out of time on this segment, but this history is great. We're going to come back and pick up where we left off.
Thank you.
George Hofford, Chuck Johnson, talking about a great regional local company in the Heritage. Back soon. Back with Chuck Johnson, owner of Johnson Nursery and Garden Center, an institution here not only in our region and state, but throughout the South and this country. But great stories, Chuck, about history. This is exactly about your company, your ancestors, founding, how you got started. And so I'm going to let you just pick up, and I'm going to try to listen and learn again.
Well, I mentioned a while ago, we didn't know how big the nurseries were then, mm-hmm. how much it grew. But I've got orders here from Kentucky for 10,000 peach trees.
Woo, today that's a lot of peach trees.
Well, the fact that you had a peach tree to live in Kentucky is another.
That's another story. That's right.
That's another story.
That's right. Those are Georgia's peaches in South. It's not that far north.
I really have no idea. I cannot imagine selling 10,000 peach trees.
In that far north.
And at the price he sold them for, I think like 15 cents each or something.
That's big money back then.
I guess. I don't know. But anyway, my grandfather continued on until he was in his 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my uncle and J.T. Johnson and my father, Willard Johnson, started about 1949,
mm-hmm.
a separate nursery business right next to my grandfather. And they built the first glass greenhouse between Nashville and Knoxville.
Oh, man, that's
for the propagation of shrubs mm-hmm. and things.
Sure.
And they would do whatever they sold, they grew from cuttings.
Mm-hmm.
They took the cuttings, they grew it 2 or 3 years in small pots, put it out in the field, and then harvest it.
Sure.
Whereas today, a lot of times, we're buying from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But they
were actually doing their
they sold,
growing and yeah,
they
developing.
Grew what they sold. And they continued on into the 60s, and a little bit into the 70s. And they were very instrumental in the propagation of ilex, which is holly.
Mm-hmm.
And they were specialized in growing yews.
Mm-hmm.
And they were one of the first ones in Tennessee to commercially propagate and grow the Texas yews and
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Other people had grown some, but they did it in a different way and on a larger scale
mm-hmm.
and shipped it out to other landscapers then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I went to Upperman High. I went back to seminary 2 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then
what a history that is. I mean, the whole history of Baxter Seminary and Baxter and the railroad.
I got a lot of information on that, too, but take another time for that one.
All right. We may have to do a part two or three or four on this, Chuck.
But I went to Baxter Seminary 2 years, and in the last 2 years, it was Upperman High School, which Kenny
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
took care of. And then I went to Tennessee Tech, and I majored in business management.
Okay.
And my uncle, Lewis Johnson, was dean of business at that time.
That was a connection I had mentioned to you, I think, offline.
Anyway, after I got my bachelor's degree, I went to UT
mm-hmm.
in Knoxville and did my master's degree in landscape design and ornamental horticulture.
Okay.
And I worked for UT for a couple of years. I would go to all five different experiment stations in the state, Greenville, Spring Hill, Springfield, Jackson, and Crossville. And we would do the different experiments.
In different locations.
Part of my thesis work and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1969, Sarah and I moved back to Cookeville.
Mm-hmm.
We built a house out on Whistler Chapel Road where we still live today.
Yeah, I know where you live. Yeah,
we've been there ever since 69. And at that time, we were a third landscape business, third wholesale, and third retail.
Okay.
And then when I'd go out and do the landscaping, Sarah would take care of the retail part.
I see.
Out of the garage.
I see.
And with a couple kids under her arm. At that and that's why she likes to talk to many people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love your whole family, your sons, your family. Everybody's been great, yeah.
So we that's where we started. And then in 83, I was coming in from a landscape job out of town. I came down 10th Street, and I noticed the old Sonic restaurant over there. Nobody remembers that one now.
Yeah.
That's where the O'Reilly's is over there now.
Okay. Yeah.
And I said, that'd make a good place for a garden center. So I bought it.
Okay.
And we operated out of that for 7 years with the canopies and everything just like a Sonic. We didn't do anything to the outside except
I see. Okay, yeah.
We put all shrubs and everything. We kept our parking spaces where they park under the canopies and things. And then in 1990, we tore that one down and built another one at the same location. And then that started getting too small pretty quick. So then I bought property out on Spring Street from Will Glenn Crawford, bought 21 acres there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took us several years to get the site prepared and everything. And we built the present garden center. We opened up in the fall of 2003.
Okay.
But we had done a lot of traveling. I had been president of the Tennessee Nursery Association.
Well, sure.
And also was president of the Garden Centers of America. And been Garden Centers of America, I traveled to probably 20, 25 different states, visiting garden centers and things. But we also went to Europe a lot. We probably went to Europe 15 times and was visiting garden centers. And at that time, they were much farther ahead of us as far as design of the garden center physical facilities and things. So we'd pick up ideas.
So you were a student of your field, best practices. You actually had your hands-on experience over years of learning, of seeing best practices and what was going on, brought it back to Cookeville.
Well, I can very well remember when we used to go visit nurseries with my father and uncle. You have to step around the mud holes and everything. Well, things changed.
Sure.
Everything is paved, no mud holes, might be a little water here and there, but because the ladies dress up a lot better, in better shoes and things, and with shopping carts, and it's entirely a different shopping experience now. But anyway, we came back and built a new building, everything basically undercover. Everything is paved. Hopefully there's not any dirt around, but we can do year-round shopping. We're open 12 months a year, and it's been a great experience. Charlie and David came and joined. Charlie came. When he came, he did an internship with Hicks Nursery in New York, Long Island.
Whoa, see? He's doing what Daddy did years ago, learning and getting things.
And then next, he went to Monrovia Nursery in Oregon and worked there.
Okay, so he's had the experience like you've had to in other places, yeah.
And then David worked with Martin Viette Nursery in Long Island, and then he worked at Briggs Nursery in Oregon. So you don't want to do everything like your father does. You've got to...
That's right, but you take a lot of what your father did and build on it.
And you just got to learn. People do different.
That's right. Different culture, different.
Somebody does it better.
buying habits.
You got to get out of the habits. That's the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
And try to pick up an easier way to do it.
Well, personal experience, my wife Gloria and I moved here in 04. I didn't know it was right after, a year after you had opened your new store, but we always loved coming out there. It's you're not in a nursery, but you are in. It's an experience. The way it's laid out, the way you're, it's a nice outing. You have customers from all over the country that come here, all over the world probably. That
we changed about 10 years ago, a lot of our advertising and stuff, and went more to the interstate billboards.
Yes.
And what that has done, that has opened up a market in Chattanooga, Knoxville, Nashville, Memphis, that people drive down the interstate, but they may pass your sign six times, but finally,
on the sixth time, they see it. Yes.
And then take two, people come in with graduation and things. So we've had people just come in, I saw your sign on the interstate. We've had people. I've shipped plants to Alaska.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not sure how to ask. How many nurseries are there, say, in our 300 miles or large, like yours, in terms of what you have there, the way you set it up? It's not just selling plants and hustling out. It's an experience.
Well, as far as the physical facilities, there's not one in Knoxville or Nashville.
I didn't think so.
No,
you've really got an attraction unto itself for people who like Gloria, my wife and I, plants and shrubbery and the outdoors. I mean,
we always have tried to be knowledgeable in the advice that we give.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes you get a little older, you might slip a little bit, but.
But no, you're.
But that's what.
1 minute.
We have people that are repeat customers. I'm maybe in third, maybe even fourth generation.
That's right, my customers. Oh yeah.
Because you got daughters, granddaughters, because we've been doing this for 50 years.
Well, you're an example of what makes our community special: homegrown, small business, family, and generations, and it's. People come there to see you. People come there to see Sarah, your family, and to come and get the feeling of being in a first-class nursery with knowledgeable people who can, they're just throwing these plants in the ground. You're telling them what to do and how to do it.
Right. So,
this has been an educational experience for me, Chuck. We've shopped for you for years, but really – getting to know you a little better. I know Sarah from Service on Boards, and I know you, but in your business. So thank you for sharing with us, and God bless you, my friend.
Thank you very much for having me.